Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dave, your host. This is the podcast where we talk about meditation and hear great teachers giving teachings related to the life and experiences of the meditator in modern life. Thanks for listening. I hope you're well. Today on the podcast, professional storyteller and meditation teacher Laura Sims will be talking about Dharma art. What is Dharma art? What is the mind of meditation have to do with being a creative person? Well, this is a great talk where you'll find out. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting Shambhala Training Level 1 the weekend of March 18th. Shambhala Training Level 1, as you know, perhaps, is our introductory weekend meditation intensive where you learn or renew one's appreciation in meditation in the context of a weekend. And it's a great opportunity, if you haven't yet experienced it, to dive in, to deepen your meditation practice, or to begin a meditation practice. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org. Click the link on the homepage, Shambhala Training Level 1. And now, Laura Sims. She is a regular contributor to the podcast. She has many great talks. Listen to them if you haven't heard them. Today's talk is about Dharma art. She is the author of Our Secret Territory. And this was a talk recorded live at our weekly Dharma gathering. So, Laura, what's on your mind?
This is the first time I have publicly, and particularly in this situation, given a talk on Dharma art, which was developed by Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, the founder of the Dharma Dhatus Become Shambhala Center, and is being further developed into this period of time by his son, the Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, who is our immediate living lineage holder of Shambhala. And when Trungpa Rinpoche came out of Tibet, and he first went to England and then came here to the States, it was not long after he arrived here that he took a particular interest in American artists. And perhaps it was partially because of the high level of our neurosis. But I think it was also familiar territory to him, of this kind of fertile dedication to curiosity and expression and exploring the nature of creativity and engagement. In 1974, he founded Naropa Institute, which is now Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. And he began a series of summer just festivals of bringing together some of the most interesting artists, writers, painters, musicians, poets, theater people, dancers, philosophers, all to Naropa for a kind of four-week exploration of the nature of art in its relationship to meditation practice. And he called it Dharma art, or art in everyday life. So Dharma is what we usually think of as the teachings. I'm studying the Dharma. Is this familiar to you? However, the actual translation of Dharma is really reality. Things as they are. The nature of space before we do anything or have any thoughts. So that is the teaching itself, which is interesting. And then art, from that point of view, is what we do with a meditative mind, how we live, how we express ourselves, how we give form to the appreciation and curiosity and confidence that arises from the sitting practice of meditation. Interesting? And so these summer events were full-on days of arts activities. And then in the evenings, in a huge space, which is now not only a Whole Foods, but the whole parking lot around it. And it was packed with hundreds and hundreds of people. Trungpa Rinpoche would give us practices. Sometimes there'd be 400 of us doing object arrangement and movement in space, or watching these mysterious slides in which he would explain to us the principles of art from an enlightened point of view. And then there'd be questions and answers. And I never had a question because most of the time I didn't quite know what was going on. Except for the fact that there was something about it that was so intrinsically alive and so oddly familiar that it was a relief to be doing these activities. And I would listen and had to abandon very often the habitual place of understanding or making sense of what he was doing on my terms. And these were kind of immersions, just complete immersions in his mind and what he kept assuring us was the nature of our minds. These teachings that he gave have in themselves become a path. What was extraordinary and sometimes shocking, I think, to all of us, was that it did bring so many artists into meditation practice and to Naropa for those summers. But over and over again, what Trungpa Rinpoche reminded us of that became something of tremendous value in my life was that actually creativity was the meditative state of mind, and that this wasn't about becoming an exhibiting artist or a performer or a great poet, that it was about being a complete, expressive, generous human being. And that every single person, when they can access, when we access a sense of being present, what we've all just done here in our sitting practice, then the natural expression of an awakening mind is curiosity and a desire to express what we see and appreciate, the details of our ordinary lives. So before I get lost in my own ramble. Because to put it in a half an hour what I've been studying and practicing for the last 35 years. He said some really astonishing things. They were astonishing at the time. He said, making art is a natural phenomena. It is what we do as human beings when we connect to unconditional mind. A great deal of the activities of the Dharma art practice are about awakening, sharpening, exploring perception and the senses. And he over and over again reminded us that meditation practice doesn't make us sensitive or more perceptive. It actually permits us, inspires us, uncovers in us the capacity for pure perception and to actually relate with all our senses to the dynamic communication of the world as it is, moment by moment. So we often stood by a square, blank piece of white paper. And there was always the preparation, which was the sitting practice, the form of coming to the paper, and the daring moment of letting go into empty space. Far different than letting go into spaced out expectation of nothing there. It was the idea of everything, when our mind relaxes, is communicating. Awareness is in constant communication. It is the message itself being present. So, by paying more attention to the space that exists around us and within us, we develop a sense of confidence. Space exists in our eyes, and it is not demanding anything. He distinguished constantly between our habit of what we think we should create or how we should become famous and get credentials in the world and this act of isness or beingness that he said was the art itself. And so in a lot of ways, we were undermined. I went in there thinking I was going to get another great way of becoming an extraordinary and unique artist. And once again, I realized that basically I was being shown how to be an ordinary human being. So the ground of Dharma art is exactly what we did from 7 to 7:30, but over a long period of time, which is uncovering the sense of basic goodness in ourselves. And I'm sure for those of you who have been here, who've read the Shambhala books, this idea of basic goodness is fundamental to the Shambhala path. It is the Shambhala translation of unconditional mind, or bodhicitta, or space before thought, or within thought. Are you all familiar with the term basic goodness? So the ground of Shambhala art is uncovering that sense of basic goodness. Without that, we can't stand at the blank paper and access the sense of pregnant presence, where insight arises and a first stroke is made, not from preoccupation or desire to place the brush somewhere, but it is just a direct, immediate act. Is this making, this touching interesting? We change through our practice. We don't really change into something else. We change in that, in a sense, we become outrageously more ourselves. We hear differently. We speak differently. We see differently. Because we have glimpses sometimes that go beyond our expectation, assumption, or projection, and suddenly things appear in their vividness. And that can happen one evening after sitting, sometimes just walking on the street, where suddenly you actually realize you have just seen a flower. We become then more curious because the passion is the seeing itself and seeing again or touching or tasting. It is as if it's the very same thing that we have looked at before, but suddenly it is phenomenally fresh and curious. Other people become far more curious to us. That is the birth, the ground, the basis of art as and in everyday life. This quality of more confidence in being present, in the ability to be curious about the details of our lives in a very different way. And the path is a discipline of working with that quality and from that quality of mind over and over again. It's a kind of slowing down and awakening the senses. One of the main teachings or sort of philosophical structures that Trungpa Rinpoche set out for us was heaven, earth, and man, which is a Chinese art principle. And over again, we would work with that form until we could create flower arrangements. We could move furniture in a room, move each other in space, so that suddenly the space between things came alive vibrantly. And there was a sense of wholeness that was purely perceived and felt, that produced some kind of delight. It wasn't possible to conceptualize why that worked or why it didn't work. But the more attuned we became and more sensitive, the more it was evident that by moving the chair over or by adding a single color, the entire room came alive. That a clever poem with some kind of pointed meaning or irony just fell flat. But that a certain word spoken next to another word suddenly left us all alert. And so this practice that we did was also about harvesting the awareness that was arising through meditation practice by having us engage with perception itself, with seeing itself, and listening, rather than being geared toward creating a project. These were extraordinary weeks. And there are some great teachers still around here in Shambhala who are teaching Dharma art. Trungpa Rinpoche said that this path was immediate and potent, that it was actually the way in which we would transform our world into some kind of enlightened society, because it was about the nature of communication and the relationship between ourselves, our world, and others. It was about discovering the uniqueness of our everyday activities, about the beauty of our everyday activities. And I don't mean making things pretty, but uncovering and finding tremendous pleasure, meaning, in the elegance of situations that were authentic. Hence, all of the details of the shrine room and the Shambhala Center, and obviously you're noticing that there is a tremendous amount of change every time you come, because there is a dedication to how, in the midst of this urban city, how do we create a space that contains, supports, and inspires openness when you walk in, just by the energy of the environment and the placement of objects, so that it supports our practice and our being together in a more heightened and awakened way. It's not an easy place to be totally lazy in. Some of us can manage that anyway. Nobody in this room, obviously. So, sometimes it was terrifying. Rinpoche would have us stand up and create spontaneous poems into the night. And they took a tremendous daring. The daring was daring to be present. Daring to wait for what he called first thought, best thought. But the path was attention to the details of our everyday life. And the fruition of the path of Dharma art, or now called Shambhala art, is expression with non-aggression. And Dharma art was described as non-aggression because it was not necessarily flat It could be fierce, vivid, confrontational, but it was never separating audience from artist or audience from speaker. It was always about the awareness and the shared space between us being alive with possibility. So art in everyday life, from Trungpa Rinpoche's point of view, and I think what those of us who have practiced it and continue to practice it and try to really come to terms with the profundity of the teachings that, you know, those weeks in 1974 to 1979 in the summertime in the talks, to have a relationship because he was shared his mind with us, which was an astonishing thing. And that this is our skillful means for disarming aggression in the world, and that the artist or the one who's living their life as art in every action is propagating trust and dignity, confidence in basic goodness, and a sense of wholesomeness. And it is not about revealing the depressing aspects of the world just to depress people or to provide sensation or to do something that is so unusual that you could just rip your arm open to bleed on a canvas because that is so shocking. Unless it is done with ultimate compassion in the moment for the benefit, it wasn't considered Dharma art. It was considered the setting sun that produced further aggression or isolated people from one another. So the reason why non-aggression is so potent in the path of Dharma art is because when the mind is non-aggressive, then the mind is tender or softened. It's alert to what's going on. It doesn't have to harm other or be right. And it is inspired by insight on the spot in the moment. And it is really about society. Trungpa Rinpoche, growing up in Tibet, in eastern Tibet, really grew up in culture, which means that there was an intact society that he lived within, that meditation, spirituality, art, dance, study, and all the practical activities were not separate. Everyone partook of all of it. So that is the idea of the bringing Dharma art into more and more of Shambhala so that we can actually practice this together. So if you're not an artist, that's just some idea that we have about ourselves. I once, during one of these Dharma art weekends in which we were endlessly making a single stroke on a piece of white paper over and over again, until suddenly the boredom or irritation of my neurotic mind just sort of like relaxed, and suddenly there was nothing more beautiful than doing that. If you have any questions about Dharma art, I've given you sort of an abstract overview of it and not the activities, but I hope that it was enlivening or interesting for you, because it's been so much a part of the practices that we inherited from Trungpa Rinpoche since the 1970s. And I really feel like it would be fantastic to share them with everybody, for us all to begin to have an availability to work in that way. So the ground, our own accessing basic goodness through meditation practice, and the path of beginning to explore the details of perception, to heighten our perception as we awaken more and more awareness, and the fruition of making our world a culture that is a culture of non-aggression, in which together we participate in activities that are of immense beauty and elegance. So, any...
Thank you, Laura, for the amazing talk.
You're welcome.
It's kind of odd coming up here and standing up like this.
What?
Oh, that's way better.
Can you talk into the microphone?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. My old ears are...
I was, while listening to your talk, and thank you so much for it, reminding the notion of tender heart of sadness, and thinking how could that idea of Dharma art be related to that? Because if there's this connectivity or longing for connectivity with the present moment in doing one's art, it's also so hard to keep that kind of connectivity in one's life. And to be brave enough and warrior enough to keep, you know, open to that. I had this intuition that had to do with, like, having a tender heart of sadness.
Well, I think awareness is tender heart. And I think once we really start to sit, it's too late to think that it's not continuous in our lives. It is continuous in our lives. We have so many habits of mass distraction that make us think that it doesn't exist, or we give up hope in a kind of habitual thought torment. And so the reason why I think we practice over and over again is not so we solidify basic goodness, but that we are becoming more flexible, softened, and that the times we do forget, because we do, we have lifetimes of forgetting, and we live in a world that doesn't advertise basic goodness. that it's easy to forget and get caught. But actually, if we didn't forget, if we didn't get caught, then we wouldn't be inspired to come back. So that's the nature of path. And, you know, I'm a storyteller, but we all are storytellers of these habitual stories that we tell ourselves, that we have forgotten, we're hopeless, we shouldn't do this, we'll never be able to do that. These are kind of empty branding slogans that we believe. And so it's a combination of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That's why we study, why we have friends, why we go outside and eat taco chips together, is because we remind each other. And that is the idea of community, to actually remind each other, or to dive down into the dark together and then, like, realize how flamboyantly futile it is together and pull each other out. So tender heart, the tender heart of sadness is not the sadness of suicidal depression. It is the sadness that is also joy, because it's in touch. It's being touched. So joy is not, you know, happy, happy, I'm never sad. Oh, no, not me. Well, you have to watch the new Masterpiece Theater, Indian Summers, to get a sense of berserk happiness, of, you know, this kind of stiff upper lip smile of everything is fine. Oh, my goodness, they just blew up our village. Let's have a cup of tea. And, you know, it's there is a quality within that of there can also be a quality in that of tenderness. But if we are hiding from the difficulties of our lives, then we can never make art. It is the experience that we meet with less and less grasping onto the experience, more and more directly experiencing it, that is the liberation. So you can want the Cadillac, you can want the fame, but if you're attached to it, you're in a lot of trouble. But wouldn't you say? So I think is that helpful? So it's you know, we have to be our own barometers in a sense, and that's the nature of practice, to begin to really appreciate and explore a sense of discernment, to know the difference between depression and tender heart, and to have compassion for our own depression also, but to be able to feel it and hold it in a cradle of loving kindness. And I'm not, you know, there are severe depressions and so forth that need very strong help, so I don't want to belittle anything like that. But our everyday traumas and our everyday depressions, which can be so agonizing, we can actually feel them and breathe into them without taking the storyline and turning a fortress into it. And it is that tender heart that allows us to make the stroke. Or to bow. Or open the computer case with full attention.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much. My question is, do you have any sense, or are there studies on how practicing art in a dharmic way, how it is beneficial to our mind or maybe even brain and body, as opposed to non-dharmic way? Does it make sense?
I think that's what my talk was about. But it's, of course, a wonderful question. Yes, because any time that we are involved with letting our mind rest, or we are able to pay full attention to something, then our bodies are healthier, because we don't shut down. We don't clasp or even leave them. So there is tremendous amount of brain research that's done on the benefits of meditation, which I don't know a lot about. You probably know far more about it, and that you can read or read Matthew Ricard's new book, Altruism, in which he's talking a great deal about the brain research that's been done, and a lot of it's been done on him. He's a very fine teacher. Is that helpful? Also, this sense of play and humor when your mind relaxes. So we know how it feels to get paralyzed in situations. It's not very pleasant. It's filled with a kind of paralyzing fear. But playing, the way that my cats give each other this little signal, and then they seem to be attacking each other, but they're playing. And it's sort of astonishingly beautiful. Then they lick each other's heads and walk away. But I don't know, there probably could be in the future a Dharma licking head practice, but there isn't one that I know of. But I imagine if you do it with kindness and awareness. You might want to seek out bald people. Anyway, one more question before we...
There we go. You speak about coming from a place of rest when creating art. I just wonder, because so much great art is based on unrest, whether it be the human condition or atrocities that have happened. So what do you think is the balance between those two?
Well, a rested mind doesn't mean that you don't experience tremendous energy and fierceness, and that you aren't looking at the pain of the world. In fact, in the Dharma art book, Trungpa Rinpoche is talking about symbolism being what is, and he said the greatest symbol of all is pain. So, you know, when we say the word pain, I think we think of pain, and then we think of pain with glue. And so, therefore, what we're talking about is feeling the direct experience without adding the glue. And that takes practice. But then again, you know, people say, what is great art? But it doesn't mean that there were great art, every great artist meditated. Might be that every great art comes from that place, which is, since it is the natural state of mind, it's not alien to non-Shambhalians or non-meditators. But for us, if we're choosing this practice, then we are making a choice of investigating the nature of our own mind as a discipline, as an essential practice to be alive in the world as it is, as opposed to in the world as we're imagining it is. It's a very dangerous place to be. That's like Israel and Palestine. Anyway, I thank you very, very much for your attention and interest. And I was trying today, you know, with all the reading and practices, and to think about what was really the essence of Dharma art as best I could articulate it. And for Rinpoche, he talked over and over again about non-aggression. and also that this is a practice that really births skillful means and elegance, not being the perfect uptight situation, of somebody better than somebody else, but basically like in the fairy tales, becoming the king and queen of ourselves and opening up our eyes so that when we look out in the world with a sense of sacred view, we see everywhere the possibility of the beauty of the world. So thank you. We could bow and have some chips.
I would love some chips right about now. Thank you, Laura Sims. Thanks for listening. Visit us at ny.chambala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. If you're in the New York area, come see these Dharma talks in person every Tuesday night at our weekly Dharma gathering. Keep listening. Tell your friends. Have a good week. Later.